Good Saturday morning, Nashville. Welcome into Riddle and the Reporter live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. Junie Riddle, Nick Keiser, and Nick Frazier behind the glass in the producing chair. How's everybody's week this week?
Not bad. Not bad whatsoever. It was a good week with Robbie and Joe, and very hot outside during the day. I can go do things now that I'm in the mornings, but wow, it's been an awesome summer. Glad to be here this morning.
And it's been hot.
It has been. And by the way, I have to do a quick little thing on Robbie and Joe because I said 3-0 for the women's team last night.
Oh, yeah? And did they get
yes,
it?
Yes, they did.
Exact score?
Yes.
Good for you.
And
hey,
they go, oh, wait, come on, that's not a called shot. Come on. And I'm like,
well, who were they playing?
Vietnam.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah,
of course. It could have. It should have been 5-0.
Could have been, but
projected
it wasn't.
Score was 6-0, 7-0.
But it wasn't.
It didn't, and it was 3-0. Look at Keiser.
So you felt Vietnam, of all countries, was going to give USA.
Well, it wasn't really It wasn't like a hey, they are going to stomp on them necessarily. I mean, look, every first game it can be a blowout for sure.
Yeah.
What was more intriguing to me last night was that Messi was able to score in his debut, by the way, which was an amazing game to watch, which I know Frazier was probably watching too.
First time ever he's done that on a debut, his score on his first game.
And he was awesome to watch last night. I had no complaints whatsoever. I was out at dinner and I saw that he was coming out and playing on the pitch for Miami, and I was like, wow, here we go.
Let me say this on the Messi front. Him and those pink Inter Miami jerseys.
You love those,
dude? That's just so fly. there's no other adjective to describe it than that is just flat out fly.
Yeah, it looked really good. Yeah.
So, but we actually got some breaking news this morning.
Yes, we did.
Jordan Schultz just sent me a DM.
Yeah,
and he said, Will Levis is going to be signing his rookie deal and reporting to training camp today with all the rest of the rookies.
Yep.
So that's good news for the Tennessee Titans. I think it was yesterday that Bryce Young signed his. So Will Levis is now second.
Yesterday afternoon.
Out of that.
Guaranteed deal, too.
Yes, yes. It was like around $37 million. I will be interested to see what Will Levis's number will be since he fell all the way to the second round. The comparison between him and Bryce Young in those numbers. Because, Will Levis, he was supposed to be a top 10 pick. So the money the Titans are saving with him, I think that'll be a really interesting discussion when those
numbers come
out.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how much he'll get. Because doesn't it varies by round, obviously, what you sign.
Yes, yes.
So there is that.
I mean, I think it's going to be like a $20 million discrepancy between the two.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, I mean, it's a pretty significant amount from going from the number one pick to dropping.
Like, even number five. There's a significant difference for sure.
But
we'll have to keep an eye on that. And also, too, I know that we'll get into this later, but there's a lot of restructuring with the Titans, too. But I know that we're going to hop into what that means for D-Hop, too.
Yes, that is going to be a huge discussion. And you just name-dropped him. The first thing I want to get into today as partaking a show topic is the signing of DeAndre Hopkins. Listen, I get it. He signed last Sunday. It's a little bit of old news. But, hey, this is our first time on air getting to be able to talk about it.
Yes.
So I want to get into this because I personally think this DeAndre Hopkins signing changes everything for the Tennessee Titans. And you know this, and everybody on this station, and everybody that listens to this show knows this, that I'm probably the most critical of the Tennessee Titans going into this year. And I said that if they got DeAndre Hopkins, that this would change everything. So DeAndre Hopkins last Sunday around noon signed a 2-year deal, which absolutely shocked me. I thought if he was going to sign with the Titans, he'd only do a 1-year deal. But he signs a 2-year deal, $26 million. The guaranteed money, some of the incentives have come out, but not the guaranteed money. Guaranteed money has not come out, so we don't know exactly how much he's going to be making, especially with the second year on the deal. We don't know if that's going to be a voided year or how that's going to be structured. So it's going to be telling, to say the least. But for me, I think that they put 2 years on this simply because they wanted to give him at least $15 million to kind of keep it in that Odell Beckham range. I think what the Titans saw with the Odell is that the Ravens signed him to a one-year deal and just completely overpaid for a guy with his injury history and his age at this point in time, and that they would rather do 2 years to, you know, be able to spread the money out. But, DeAndre, you're still going to be getting the same, if not more, than Odell Beckham got if you do the 2 years with us. And obviously, I think that this is kind of a prove year for this organization that, you know, a 2 year deal, meaning if everything goes well, they can run it back again next year if they really want to.
Yeah.
And if not, they can move off Derrick Henry, Tannehill, Byard, and, you know, DeAndre Hopkins as well, and do that full reset if this year isn't the year that they necessarily wanted
it
to be.
And I think that's a good thing to point out is the 2 years and also keeping him in the same realm as an OBJ, because realistically we've already had this discussion of who would you rather have, and being paid is in this as well. And what I like about D-Hop's deal, which was another called shot for me being done last weekend, and it was on Sunday. So looking at what he's going to bring to the Titans, you know, he was, you know, throwing out there on social media that I'm going to make y'all's jobs easy in the wide receiver room, which he definitely will in some regard. But however, I would like them to still distribute the ball as best as they can. However, he's going to help tremendously. And yes, you have been very critical about that for a very good reason, because I kept thinking to myself, even after the signing, Junie, I was curious of who's going to ask Rand Carthon, who's going to ask these OCs or Mike Vrabel about, hey, why were you guys so content with the wide receiver room going into free agency and you didn't do anything? Like, that's a more intriguing thing for me, is what if? Like, I know that, you know, Disney has this what if with like Marvel, but what if on the Titans here, you know, what if they had not gone and just picked up a veteran wide receiver or gotten D-Hop? That was more intriguing to me, Junie, because it goes into the realm of, why were you so comfortable? Why did you feel so adamant that your current room would have gotten the job done? Sure, they could have, but I think adding D-Hop, it changes all of this.
I just don't think that they wanted to take an unnecessary risk. And,
no.
And this is what I mean by that. I think at the time after the draft, when the only receiving position that they addressed was in the seventh round with Colton Dowell, you know, a local guy from Lebanon, Tennessee, I felt like that they were waiting on something, and I think they kind of anticipated that DeAndre was going to get released.
They probably
were trying to seize that opportunity. But you also got to think here that, you know, this is, we're still not into training camp. Training camp is coming up this upcoming week, and a lot of guys get cut. I mean, there's going to be some surprise guys that are going to get let go, some cap casualties, some older veterans. And I truly believe that if this whole DeAndre Hopkins thing didn't work out, that the Titans would have waited for their opportunity to get it. But I got to tell a quick funny story, though.
Okay.
So Sunday when this news dropped, I was so upset. Like, I was really,
you were
really
upset.
Mad. Yes, I was. Well, I was upset for a reason, because I wasn't on Twitter when it happened. I felt like I was a little bit late to the punch.
But was your rate limit exceeded already or something?
No,
for the day?
No, not the rate. I haven't seen the rate limit since it really came out that way. I don't know if that's still a thing. But either way, we were on our way to Holiday World, me, my wife, and
very
son.
Fun.
Family outing. And I was in the middle of a stop because my son needed a diaper change. And so, like, meanwhile, like I'm, like, holding my son, waiting to go into the family bathroom to get him a change in, like, the local Publix. And, like, I'm waiting, and all the other bathrooms are getting cleaned. So there's, like, a line to get into this family bathroom. I finally get done and sit in, and I'm getting all these messages blown up, because obviously I got my son in the hand, I got the diaper bag in the other hand, and I finally get back in the car, like, everybody's already talking about it, it's already been broken news. I'm like, oh my God, I was waiting for this. I was, like, waiting for the moment to, like talk about it, and I was, like, late to the punch on the whole DeAndre thing because I had to change my son's diaper.
That's okay. It's okay. Hey, and also, I did look this up because we were curious about the Will Levis contract. So from the second round, like, the very top to the very bottom, you're going to see guys get between $8.6 million, and then at the very bottom of the second round, you'll see guys get anywhere from $5 to around $3 million is usually what you see.
And is that that's the total. That's not per
year. Correct. Yes.
So you're talking about Will Levis 4-year deal, let's say $8.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about like $2.1 million a year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's dirt cheap compared to, what is it, $37.5 million that Bryce
And you know what, too? I think this could be a factor for him, and maybe not as much early in his entire career, but this will be an incentive for him and a motivation with a chip on his shoulder. You know, I wasn't picked very high. Now I can seize this opportunity more than likely. You know, there's always some sort of storyline. So that's it's something quick to point out because we do want to take a look at some of how this is all going
to
go out.
Yeah, and I would also like to, you know, kind of give us a pat on the back, this show right here, because as soon as this whole Nicholas Petit-Ferrer stuff went down, another addition that the Titans are looking to make, it's not official yet, they're bringing this guy in for a workout.
Yes.
But who did we name drop when this whole thing about Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, Titans starting right tackle came about? We name-dropped George Fant.
Yes, we did.
A former WKU alumni. He played basketball at Western Kentucky. He ended up doing a fifth year and played football. Was it the first time ever?
I believe
at least in college.
Yes, it was the first time in college. And I actually – what's funny is I had class with his nephew or his cousin, I think.
Uh-huh.
I believe it's his cousin. It was Trey. Yeah, Trey. And he would talk to me, and he's like, yeah, man, you know, my cousin plays for the Jets. I'm like, who's your cousin? And when I heard out, and then I found out the full story. So he played. He got recruited to play basketball. Then his very last year, kind of like Carson Williams, I don't know if you recall who that is, but he was a basketball player too. And George got asked by the football team, hey, would you be interested in playing with us next year? Because I think they needed some players.
And was he a tackle when he switched over?
I think he was. I think he played an offensive line, yeah.
Okay, I couldn't remember if it was tight end or tackle.
He wasn't used as an offensive weapon. I know he was used as a trench guy for sure.
Yeah.
And he was standout, too. He was a force to be reckoned with.
Well, yeah, because he only played 1 year, and then he went to the league.
Yeah, he was a really good college player.
So I would say this about George Fant, if they end up signing him and the workout goes well, they are expected to do it. I think this is a great signing.
Yeah.
Right now, as we are speaking, I truly believe that he is a better right tackle
than
Nicholas Petit.
Even TD came on Robbie and Rexrod yesterday and mentioned that he could see him start the rest of the way, depending on what that looks like if he does sign.
Well, and again, you know, Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, third-round pick. He's only in his second year.
Right.
You know, George Fant's not going to be here longer than probably this season.
Yeah.
It might be better for the team to go with an older veteran who's more proven. You know, he's not going to blow you off the page with his stats or what he's able to do, but he's serviceable. He's not going to make too many mistakes. He's a veteran. He's going to get the job done. So I think it's a great fit for them to go out there.
If he does sign here, and I did look him up really quickly, the reason you're probably thinking tight end is because there have been scenarios where he is flexed in a play as a tight end and has caught some touchdowns.
Okay, fair. So I was kind of on the right track.
Really quick, you could see even more of Derrick Henry throwing some more touchdowns.
That would be fantastic.
You could see it.
Fantastic. But listen, the Tennessee Titans are making a lot of additions, bolstering this roster as we're heading into training camp. But one guy had to make a bit of a financial sacrifice in order to make this happen. We're going to get into that next. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Tune into the Chase McCabe Show and Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace this upcoming Wednesday and Friday. Get the latest from Titans training camp. They'll get player interviews and deliver the latest updates with Titans practice as the team preps for the 2023 season. Coverage of Titans training camp is presented by the Simmons Bank Open and Parman Energy. We teased it before the break, talking about a player on the Tennessee Titans that gave up some financial gain for the betterment of the team. And guess what? It is nobody new to doing this. For his third time in the last 3 or 4 years, Kevin Byard has restructured his contract again. His cap hit is now lower to $11 million, going from 14.1 to $11 million. And there are now incentives that we don't know yet that can bolster that money back up to that. So basically, they're turning some of his salary into incentive based in order to free up some money to land DeAndre Hopkins and also maybe try and get George Fant in there as well. If that workout goes well. So Kevin Byard again. Doing a restructure. So Kevin Byard went on Bussin' with the Boys a few weeks ago, and he had some comments about the whole asking for a pay cut. And this is prior to him actually restructuring his deal. So here was his comments a few weeks ago.
I ended last year and was like, talking to my agent, like, bro, like, I'm wanting to get an extension. Like, I want to be here. But, I did the clean out day and the media and everything. And I'm like, bro, like, I don't want to play for another organization. Like, this is my legacy. I love it here in Nashville. And I have a conversation with my agent at the end of the season, like, because I kind of know, like, I'm a very business savvy person. I'm kind of smart. Like, I understand that. And I feel like we can pivot after this. But, like, kind of talking about John, and John was trying to sell out as much as he could to build a championship team. And so for myself, like, I restructured my contract twice. The first time, I think, was to sign Clowney. And the second time was, I think, after I went all pro or something like that. Restructured again. It might have been to sign Robert. It was something like that.
Yeah.
Because, like, you're trying to bring on talent. So you're trying to, create cap space. But what that does is what most people don't realize. What it does is it increases your cap hit later in the life of your contract. So that's a situation where, like you said, you get a new GM that comes in. He just looks at this sheet and just like, man, I have, like, for example, obviously you got released, mm-hmm. Ben Jones got released, Bug got released. He's looking like, okay, the roster's a little bit weird. We're a little bit older now.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I got to clear cap space from anywhere. And so, like I said, I mean, that was my idea of going into the conversation. So my agent called me, was like, hey, it kind of went another way. So, like, obviously I wasn't in the room, so I don't really know exactly how, like, was it a situation where it's like, hey, we want to do extension. They just went the complete opposite way.
That was Kevin Byard on Bussin' with the Boys, talking about his agent going and getting an extension, and it ended up the conversation went for a turn, and ended up them asking him for a pay cut. So when this whole restructure came out, Nick, what was your initial thoughts when this happened after he declined to take a pay cut earlier in the season?
Well, kudos to Jarrett Stillman for having it first a super long time ago, by the way. I was filling in, actually producing his show at the time when he had initially thrown this out there that they had asked him to take a pay cut. So there is that. But now you fast forward all the way to now. And quite frankly, KB did stand his ground. However, he got a pay cut. And whether he is going to say that precisely at that or not, he did. And he stood his ground as best as he probably could, Junie. But the way I look at it is, you have to be on the same page with your franchise. And at some point in time, and especially in that interview that he had with Taylor and Will, I felt like he maybe was on the same page with them. He probably knew more, which he should because he's on the team. But I feel like you need to be sold on a plan or some sort of vision for the franchise. And I think that they've done a good job of that at times. He brought up two different scenarios, and I'm sure he'll be able to share a third one at some point in time once it's all said and done. But my initial thought to it is you wanted to hold your ground, and eventually you changed your mind. You told them, okay, I like this plan. I like who we're adding. This makes a whole lot more sense. So I'm wondering, and I know that we'll probably hear from him because training camp is coming up and they'll make different players available. So the thing I'm curious about is, and I'm sure it'll be one of the first questions he gets, and I'm sure he's waiting for it, is why did you take your pay cut? What did the Titans have to say to you?
Well, see, I don't necessarily see it as much of a pay cut as other people do.
Sure.
When somebody's taking a pay cut, there isn't necessarily – I wouldn't say there's incentives that are going to bolster you back up to that same number. And again, we don't know what these incentives are.
No.
We don't know if it's like you got to get five.
And
there's a good connotation to saying, or a better connotation to saying, that he's restructured his deal. And I would love to just say that, but realistically too, is that is what the Titans asked him to do, was we are going to move these things around. And like, you know what? He may not see it as a pay cut because they are attainable things for him this season. And there is a lot of merit to what he's able to do on the field. So more power to the Titans. And another thing too is, and I pointed this out last week, I think Amy Adams-Strunk recognizes that I'm going to reward my players for their play, and I'm going to make it, well, she's going to challenge them, but I think it'll be an attainable thing for her to challenge the players. Even it's kind of a personal thing too, where it's, I want you to help make this team as best as it possibly can be. And I think this was a good choice for them to do that.
I will say this. They need to extend Kevin Byard. I don't say this very often because I think your play and your success warrants what you get on the business side of things. But when you have a guy like this, and he's proven it on the field year in and year out, never missed a game. He's probably one of the biggest vocal leaders on this entire team. He's made the sacrifices financially to go out and get additional pieces while you were still in your window to be able to do it. He's done it 3 times in the last 4 years. I mean, you just don't find guys like that. Everybody wants to get their bag. And when you have a guy like this and he's still playing at a high level, I get it. He's playing the safety position, which isn't a premier position in the game today. And he's also, about to be 30 years old. They owe it to him.
I
feel like with everything that he has done, he is the exception. He's not the rule. You owe it to this guy to extend him, give him some extra money on the back end of his career, and let him continue to be a Titan and finish his career out here. Because you want to know what? He deserves it.
Yeah.
He absolutely 100% deserves it.
Yeah, I think he does. And that's the way that we need to look at some of these signings is, A, they deserve it, but also, too, they are here to work and make sure that their value is seen. And that is something with a Mike Vrabel team that you get to see out of all of the guys throughout the entire depth chart. You'll see it from someone on special teams, which hopefully is a lot better this year for sure. But then you can also see it in a guy like a Will Levis, but even a Ryan Tannehill, where, look, Tannehill knows that, you know what, I definitely am coming in on a bargain. And he recognizes what his value is for himself personally. But I feel like the whole theme with the Titans, Junie, is they are hard workers, and that's what separates them in the AFC South, and more importantly in the AFC at times too. And there's a lot of different examples. The best one I can come up with off the top of my head was, look, they held their own against the Chiefs last year, and that was an amazing feat by them to hang in there and go to overtime. Now you look at this season and you go, let's stay healthy. Let's fight as best as we can, and anything's possible. That's what I hear from this team all the time, albeit that's something you hear from every team, but it's Mike Vrabel, and it's the same group of guys, for the most part, coming back. So I think we're going to see a lot of fight out of this team, Junie. It's going to be fun watching them.
615-737-1025. If you have any comments about DeAndre Hopkins or Kevin Byard in the signing going into training camp, we will take your phone calls coming up next. Also, though, about a month ago, I came on these airways and I had a take about Will Levis and Ryan Tannehill. Where do I stand now that DeAndre Hopkins is a Tennessee Titan? We will get into that next. You are listening to Riddler and Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back into Riddle and the Reporter. We are talking Tennessee Titans right now. We talked about DeAndre Hopkins signing. We talked about the Kevin Byard restructure, a.k.a. maybe a pay cut. So where do I stand? I came on these airways about a month ago, and I gave a pretty hot take, according to most, that I thought that the Titans should try and work Will Levis in as the starting quarterback sooner rather than later. Didn't say he needed to start the season, but I felt like they needed to make that transition sometime throughout the season. So here were my comments earlier this year, a brief snippet of it, about what I said about Will Levis taking over the starting job this year. And for me personally, when I look at Ryan Tannehill, I just don't see the upside. And everybody says, last year Ryan Tannehill looked so good before he got hurt. Did he really? Because
if memory serves me correctly, he started four of those games in that seven-game losing streak. If memory serves me, he was 6-6 as a starter, and he only threw 13 touchdown passes. In 12, what is that, a touchdown a game? He averaged 208 yards a game. Now, granted, was everything around him good? No, it absolutely was not. The offensive line was atrocious. Dennis Daly was a turn cycle that was just allowing edge rushers dancing around him at all times. I get it. Ryan Tannehill did not have the best supporting cast last season. But in this league nowadays, you need a quarterback with some elite upside, and that is something that Will Levis has. So, yeah, I came on here about a month ago, and I made the case as to why I felt, with where the Titans were at the time, why Will Levis should start. And to be honest with you, I did make a quote during all that because there were rumors and speculations about DeAndre Hopkins coming and being a part of the franchise. And I said, if they sign a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, you can throw that take out the window.
Oh, yeah.
Because when I look at 2020, and that was probably the best year for a Titans offense ever, Ryan Tannehill had 33 touchdowns in seven interceptions, nearly threw for 4,000 yards that year as well. And I say this because when Ryan Tannehill has adequate weapons around him, he is a serviceable quarterback.
Yeah.
And so with DeAndre coming in, likely being the number one receiver to start out the year, at least until, you know, Treylon Burks finds himself in this league. You know, Treylon Burks being the number two, having that first-round caliber talent. You know, Chigakonkwo, I mean, I think he's on a lot of people's radars as a breakout tight end this year. Didn't get all the opportunities last year, but when he did, he made the most out of it. And then Kyle Phillips, a guy that I have seen at training camp, and especially in that first game last year, have really good chemistry with Tannehill. You got to let Tannehill ride this last year out. If the Titans are still going for it, and you want a surefire thing and not worry about the future, in which I think signing DeAndre Hopkins screams, we're still in win-now mode, I think you still go with Ryan Tannehill because I think with the proper pieces around him, he can be a really good quarterback.
Yeah, he absolutely can be. And that's why super long time ago, you and I had all these different, you know, picks on who would you rather have maybe over Tannehill. And that's why, in some regard, I would still lean on him to be an established quarterback. And that's what he is. He's an established quarterback. At the same point in time and in the same breath, I would still take Tannehill just based on his experience over some of the younger guys in the AFC South. So with the point that you're making, and especially with the roster that they have now, now you add in D-Hop. Now you add in maybe someone that's a little bit better on the offensive line that's a veteran. That will significantly help and give Tannehill some more cushion. I also feel like he's going to be very motivated to be at his best this season, and I think he's been down the last couple of years compared to where he thought he may be. And I think watching this quarterbacks series on Netflix, by the way, which I am now a little bit more caught up on, I've not finished it yet, but it's been a good perspective for me getting to learn how some of these athletes think. And I'm not speaking how I may think of Ryan Tannehill because he's not on the series, but when you are going through your progressions, when you're going through what your team is going through as a whole, it's difficult. And injuries are more significant than people think. So,
especially with this Titans team.
Yes, it absolutely is. In the last 2 years, it's been their downfall, quite frankly. And so we want to see a healthier team this year. That's the hope. I think that's one of the storylines that national media does not give enough credit to, I believe, is the significance behind the amount of main games lost by this roster and more or less this franchise. And I'd be curious to see what their response is this year. And they changed a lot of their training staff too. You know, Derek talked about they fired Haas. But look, they are trying their very damnedest and hardest to make sure that there is a big difference this year.
Doing everything. I mean, they even moved off grass.
Yeah.
I mean, they had Kentucky bluegrass ever since.
And guys are not a fan of it. Guys are not a fan of it. But I feel like we will see, I don't know. This is
because it's that different synthetic turf.
I know, but what I was going to say was I don't know if we'll see more or less injuries. But, like, also, too, like, there is a lot of research to do based on this, and so I want to know more about it. I know that Jim Wyatt wrote more about it when they first announced that they were changing to this. I know the field looks god-awful over halfway through the season, typically here in Nashville, unless they do some doctor work to it.
Yeah.
But realistically, a lot of guys don't like it because you do see some more injuries like an ACL or an MCL or sprains or things like that. So I'm not sure how it's going to pan out.
So injuries aside, though.
Sure.
With the addition of DeAndre Hopkins,
mm-hmm.
in comparison to the Jacksonville Jaguars, because I personally think it's a two-team race for the South.
Yeah.
Do you think that this elevates the Titans over the Jaguars?
Not necessarily, I would say. I would definitely put the odds up for the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the first couple of weeks, for me, I want to see what the Jags look like. I think they're still the favorites,
yeah.
But I think it's a lot closer. So, and I'm not a gambling man, but I do think that the line will be pretty close to who the favorite would be. I wouldn't say exactly, because like I said, I don't know how they do the lines, but mm-hmm. I think it would be significantly closer for sure.
So where I was at before the D-Hop signing was I thought the Jags would be a 2-3 game better than the Titans in the standing. And now I think this puts them right there with them.
I think that's fair.
Just with how good the Titans defense is and just how much this changes everything about the offense. I mean, with all the guys that they were going to rely on, they were all going to be year two guys, and we talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
And you would really need all of them to have really stout seasons for this offense
Absolutely.
To be able to keep up with a team like Jacksonville. You add DeAndre Hopkins, it just changes the entire dynamic of this team, and especially with a guy like Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Derrick Henry is so used to seeing nine men, eight men boxes that are just there to stop him, and the Titans receiving game hasn't been feared the last 2 years. This is going to change. This
yeah,
is going to change that.
It will, and imagine the duo that Burks and Hopkins could possibly be. That's your best hope, is you want to see guys that are dogs on the field and that are fighting for balls. And apparently with, you know, D-Hop only dropping one pass last year, I mean, look, or he probably dropped, I don't know precisely, I'm not sure that how close that metric is actually tracked or not. But look, regardless, if these guys come in and they are playing at their peak right now for what they should be, I think all bets are off that they should be leaders in the AFC South. I think that's a good thing to probably throw out now until we see it, but I would feel way more confident if that was the case.
And also, I mean, just in the AFC in particular, you know, I said that there were only maybe four teams that I thought that were worse for sure than the Titans, and that was the Patriots, Raiders, Colts, and Texans.
Yeah.
And now I look at it, and I think that they're right there in the middle of the pack with teams like, you know, the Ravens and the Steelers and the Browns and, you know, maybe the Chargers. I think that they're right there in that middle tier, and kind of just the way that the schedule plays out,
mm-hmm.
and maybe the fact that the Titans have a bit of an easier schedule,
yeah.
that could give them an advantage when it comes to some of these other teams, because maybe they're not more talented
mm-hmm.
than teams like, you know, the Chargers and the Ravens. And they might not have as much talent as those teams, but just because of who they play, that might give them an edge, and maybe they could be fighting for a playoff position.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think this changes everything. I did not think that they were a playoff team before this signing, and with this and the way that it just completely changes everything about this offense, I think that they're right there in the mix, and they have a solid
okay.
shot at making the playoffs. If health prevails,
uh-huh.
I just think that there's just no way, after leading the NFL in total injuries the last 2 years,
that
they could possibly do this 3 years in a row. It would be unfathomable to
yeah.
me.
I will say this. I was on the Chase McCabe show, producing with Chase, the other day, and he mentioned, you know, we were talking about lines and such, and with DeAndre Hopkins, if he were to come to Nashville. So we looked at the lines before DeAndre Hopkins news, and it was 7.5 was the over-under on season wins for the Titans. That line was set at -108. Now with DeAndre Hopkins coming to Nashville, the line is still the same at -102. So a minute number has dropped them to being more favorable to go under 7.5 games. Personally, I think it's a trap. I believe that a lot of bettors, once the football season comes around, that number will escalate due to the public, you know, bet, and it will possibly go up to +8.5.
I'm saying this right now. The addition of DeAndre Hopkins will bring at least one extra win this year, if not two.
I would say two.
I think two, but I'm saying at minimum one extra win. I had them in my way too early prediction, had them going 8-9. I'm saying minimum now, 9-8, and if things go really well,
10-7. It changes the entire dynamic for me. But another dynamic that is being changed in the NFL, and this is a very interesting topic that has been going on the last couple of years, is the running back market. Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs not signing their franchise tags. We're going to get into why this is happening and if this is fair for the position. We're going to get into that next. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back into Riddle and the Reporter. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Download their app and use the promo code GAME for a bunch of different discounts that you can get. The running back market nowadays is really, really starting to dry up. It seems like there is a dispute between modern-day backs and the teams that drafted them after their rookie deal is up. And a lot of talented guys are getting left out of this. And this season, I think, is a little bit more marquee than most because we're talking about two of the better backs from last year that are looking to get long-term deals after their rookie deal. And their teams are not budging on trying to give them the franchise tag. And we're talking about Saquon Barkley of the Giants and Josh Jacobs of the Raiders, who actually led the NFL in rushing last year. So I was watching The Herd earlier this week, and Eddie George was on there talking about the running back position, and I thought that this was really insightful. So here is Eddie George, former Tennessee Titans running back, on The Herd talking about the running back market.
That's a very fair take by you. When you look at, you know, the last three guys that have had extensions, Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley, and Christian McCaffrey, and Christian is probably the one that's had the best, second half of his contract, one of the second contract of the two. You know, Ezekiel is without a team right now. Todd Gurley is on the downside of his career. I mean, you can certainly look at that. And a lot of factors go into that. I think, you know, when you talk about the running back position, the perspective of the league is that running backs are a dime a dozen. You can get one cheap. You can get one in the draft. You can do it by having a committee of running backs. Unless you have a special skill set and you can dominate a game. So you're looking at just different guys that can plug and play that have a different skill set than paying one guy everything. Because everything now is predicated toward the quarterback, supporting the quarterback, getting the weapons, the receivers, the tight ends. And that's where the investment is going for the offensive side of the football. On the defensive side, it's the pass rushers. It's the hybrid linebackers that can cover your tight ends. It's the defensive backs, the safeties. So this is a quarterback-centric league, whereas when I was playing the game, it was running backs. You know, right. Emmitt Smith and Barry Sanders set the market. And from that point on, it was myself, Jerome Bettis, Curtis Martin, Marshall Faulk, Fred Taylor, you know, to name a few, that we took advantage of that time because offenses ran through the run game.
That was Eddie George on The Herd, and I thought that he hit the nail on the head with what is going on because a lot of running backs in the league, I mean, we saw them kind of collectively getting together on social media. We saw Derrick Henry make a post. We saw Najee Harris make a post, Austin Eckler, and it seemed like a lot of these veterans were coming out and saying that this isn't fair, that the running back position needs to be a little bit more respected. And I think what Eddie highlighted there is really why the position is being devalued. And it's because the passing game is really dominating football nowadays. And the quarterback position and how much money they're making. I mean, guys are making here soon it's going to be $60 million a year. And that changes just everything. You know, left tackles are getting paid more. Pass rushers are getting paid more. Top tier corners. You know, we saw the wide receiver market, guys that quarterbacks are going to be throwing the ball to. I mean, A.J. Brown getting $25 million a year. We did not see contracts like this for some of these positions, but it all is centered around the quarterback, whereas growing up in the early 2000s, seeing guys like Eddie George, like Jerome Bettis, like LaDainian Tomlinson, like a lot of these guys, you know, the run game came first. You know, if you could run the ball and play good sound defense, you were always going to be in games. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, that is not the case. And that's why I think that the market is what the market is. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that it's unfair that running back, it's just the game is changing. And I look at teams like San Francisco that use multiple running backs and aren't paying guys a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And again, it's different now that Christian McCaffrey's there. But, you know, they were still going to NFC championships and Super Bowls having, you know, three different kind of mediocre guys.
I know. And one thing I go to when I think of this topic of conversation, Junie, is, and this goes back to, like, just it's a one good childhood, I would say, experience I had was playing some of the early Madden games. And the reason I'm bringing this up is I want to talk about guys that were kind of one-hit wonders, because I think this does impact the market a little bit. And the reason being, I'm going to get to that. But, like, remember guys like a Peyton Hillis, who was on a Madden cover after a really good season but then fell off. He just gone after that. A couple other guys, too, that I think were interesting, too. You know, Justin Forsett was pretty good. I thought he was pretty consistent in his entire career, but he had a couple of years where I thought he would pop off really well, too. Another guy for me, too, I think this would be an interesting one, too. Spencer Ware is one, I think, too. Played really well under Andy Reid, so I liked him a lot. But I think what I'm getting at here is it is a saturated market, but I think guys need to be put in the right situation. And I think the way that changes the market is, yes, you're going to have guys that play long term, but the lifespan of an NFL running back is what? Most guys are good before they're 30, you know?
Yeah.
But at the point in time of, if you see, like, you know, a Marshall Faulk, you know, that was a really good example by Eddie there. And I know Eddie played for a while, too. But you're just not the same after a certain amount of years. You have a lot of miles on those legs.
Yeah.
And
getting hit constantly.
You just can't take it for too much
longer. Well, even in the passing game, you know, they're taking some big licks from blitzing linebackers, you know, stepping up. So running backs is another position that gets hit a lot,
yes.
Especially when you're, like, physically running as much. It's the collision. It's the speed. It's the shiftiness. And
mm-hmm.
I'll go back to two guys, and I think that this is where things really change.
Sure.
In the era of where the comparison was, who was the best running back?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Le'Veon Bell or was it Todd Gurley?
Mm.
We saw Todd Gurley have a great season in 2018, and he got injured in that playoff run, and he got paid and ended up never being the same after that injury again, and he was out of the league by 27. Mm. Le'Veon Bell got franchise tagged by the Steelers. He wanted a long-term extension, ended up sitting out the entire 2018 year, and then they throw in James Conner, a guy that they got third or fourth round, and on a game-per-game stat basis, you know, they were kind of even keel mm-hmm. with their production in the receiving and rushing game. So those two things, I think, is what has really kind of turned the running back market into what it is today.
Sure.
And I think that we're going to see it continuing going forward.
Absolutely. And that's the biggest thing is, yeah, it's saturated at times, but I think, too, that's what you got to think about is, look, there are guys that can step up in good situations. We've seen one-hit wonders before, but at the same point in time, these guys like a Saquon or a Josh Jacobs, the reason they're not getting paid is because they know the value of the market. So that's kind of just the sad truth to it.
So the position that is now taking over the NFL is the quarterback position, and Netflix came out with a documentary following three NFL quarterbacks throughout the 2022 season. The three of us have watched at least majority of it, and we are going to give our opinions and what we saw in the documentary. Coming up next, hour number two, Riddle and Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.